9 months on from that referendum,
the total number of votes cast in favour of Remain was 16,141,241. The total number of votes cast in favour of Leave was 17,410,742. This means that the UK has voted to leave the European Union.
We're now just hours from Article 50 finally being triggered. Indeed, if you're listening to the podcast, it probably already has been. We've discussed trade implications, the legal issues, but what about financial risk and opportunities from the change that's coming? This morning, we'll hear from Lloyds Bank. Plus, we'll have more on those CLA red lines that it says must form the negotiations that are about to get underway.
Sunday, March 26th, 2017. This is the Farming Programme with Sean Dunderdale.
Good morning. Welcome to the start of a rather historic week, the week Article 50 will be triggered by Theresa May. It means in 2 years' time, we'll be leaving the EU. With uncertain times comes opportunities, but what are they? And what are the financial implications of whatever lies ahead? Michael Summers is from Lloyds Bank and says mitigating the risks that are coming is key to agriculture's future.
I think the important point is that hitherto the Common Agricultural Policy has provided a cushion for the consequences of some risks going against us. So if a price fell, there has always been the cushion of a subsidy to get us by. There is potential that that cushion will, it may not be completely removed, but certainly be reduced. And I think it's time now for people to look at their own individual business and consider what are the consequences of them no longer having that cushion.
You showed a fascinating slide of real-term income for 1973 compared to today, and there was a clear buffer there which took into account the subsidy. And if that subsidy is gone, then things will change, won't they? And maybe having that buffer has made people not really take the risk, take it so seriously, perhaps.
Correct. I think the key point there is that if the consequences of a price falling ends up in you having a lower profit, you can still continue to trade. But if the consequence of something going the wrong way results in you making a loss, that might challenge your ability to trade. And if you looked at those numbers which you commented on, in very simple figures, you know, somewhere in the region of £3.8 billion a year gets paid currently by the EU in subsidy to the agricultural sector in various different schemes. Total income for farming over the last 10 years has averaged not that much above and below that for quite a long period of time.
And it's a worry, but it's being aware of that, isn't it? Like you say, to try and mitigate it.
I think it's being aware of it, and I think what an individual manager of a business can do very easily is sit down and just assess the consequences of the risks they're exposed to. So what does that actually mean practically? That means sitting down, might be with your professional, with your consultant, and doing a very simple financial analysis of your business and then sensitising that financial analysis relative to those risks. So that might be grain price, it might be interest rates, it might be currency, it could be, you know, any amount of things. For a business that's relying on any particular input or output that they're exposed to, they need to be quantifying what the financial implications of that are.
You may be touching on already, but if there was one thing you wanted people today to take away from the session, what would it be?
I think that's very clear. I think I could be very clear on that, and that is basically to quantify the financial implications, potentially, of you not undertaking some sort of assessment of the risks on your farm.
Now, of course, you are a banker, but also a farmer. You've got your own farm in Leicestershire. How's things on the farm, the family farm?
Yeah, no, I'm familiar with all of the challenges from a farming perspective. We're a medium-sized arable farm, and when I look at the total income from farming figures, which we've looked at tonight, I'm always comfortable presenting those figures because they fit what I see at home on the farm. So that is, the reality is that the surplus available to use for our own means in any year, it's a long time since that surplus has exceeded the annual subsidy check.
Well, going back to the start, we are facing uncertain times. Volatility is going to be an issue over the coming years. But there are people at hand, people we can talk to. And
absolutely. I mean, this is possibly unique at this moment in time. We have a team of specialist agriculture managers who only deal with agriculture. And some of those individuals have been within the team for 30 years and only work with agriculture. And we would be delighted to come and talk to people on their farms, just to, you know, to give them a second opinion on how their businesses are structured and what changes they might be considering. But importantly, I think it is really important to consider some sort of professional involvement in assessing your farming business, and that's primarily because the involvement of a professional brings a second pair of eyes that can take a look at a business objectively and ignore and disregard many, or rather be objective about those issues that associated with the family or the ownership of land, those sorts of factors which a third party can look at independently and introduce a more objective view.
Michael Summers of Lloyds Bank there. Well, last week on the programme, you might remember, we outlined the CLA's red lines that it says must not be crossed to secure the best possible deal for food and farming in the Brexit negotiations. Well, Ben Underwood can now tell us more about just what those red lines are, and indeed, how confident is he that the government will actually take note?
Well, effectively, these red lines are what we say are the factors that should be priority for the government and are our baseline, if it were, that should not be crossed by the UK government when negotiating the best possible free trade agreement for food and farming. And so we're releasing a series of these sort of red line documents which are meant to inform, educate and influence the government in what we feel the priority should be as we go and move towards this sort of negotiation for life and post-Brexit.
And what kind of areas will they cover?
Well, the first one is trade, and I think we all recognise, whilst a lot of the conversations around Brexit, certainly in the agricultural world, often lean towards the support mechanisms in the future, we actually all recognise that until we really know the foundations of any forward trade agreement, it's difficult to fill in the gaps on the other issues, such as labour requirements and the support mechanisms. So trade is the first one of these, and we have three main red lines, if it were, that we're laying out in this document for government to take heed and take notice of. I mean, the first one, obviously, is a trade agreement with the EU that secures tariff-free and, importantly, non-tariff barrier-free access to Europe. And effectively, what we're saying there is we want minimal friction for our, importantly and first and foremost, our exports, but also our imports. And it's worth just reminding that only last year our exports were worth 11 billion into the EU and our imports were 28 billion. So really crucial that we have friction-free movement and trade between those two markets going forward. The second is very much around the transition. Article 50 is going to be triggered. We then have 2 years to start these negotiations on any form of free trade agreement. And what we're saying is the government must absolutely make sure that transitional agreements are in place if all those negotiations haven't happened once we get to Brexit. Because the alternative is that we effectively fall out of the single market and we are subject to WTO rules and tariffs. And if anyone has taken the time to look what they may be on, for example, wheat exports, it's quite frightening reading. So that's a major issue that the government need to concentrate on. And then thirdly, and perhaps the one that gains most attention, is the government cannot simply allow greater levels of tariff-free or reduced tariffs for exporters to our market. And that needs very careful attention. and scrutiny of detail to ensure that we don't have this impact overnight, if it were, of cheap Argentinian beef, is an example that's often used, that could flood in and put our beef industry out of market overnight. And there's all sorts of examples that are played out in the farming press. So there are three main lines, and that's what we're using as our lobbying tools as we go forward in these negotiations.
I guess the question I raised it or hinted earlier at the beginning: do you think the government will take note? And what happens if they cross these red lines?
Well, I mean, a major concern, of course, is that agriculture will be used as a bargaining chip. And, of course, government priorities will always lie with the service and the banking sector first and foremost. And we saw the example of that when Liam Fox announced his ministerial team in the trade department, and none of the ministers had agriculture in their portfolio. So we are deeply concerned about that, but this is why we're producing documents like this and starting on the front foot and lobbying now, because it's up to organisations like the CLA to make the case and make our points heard. And so I'd like to think securing a safe, wholesome food supply, as well as securing the future of a farming industry that provides so much more than just food in this country, but provides the environment and the countryside we all love and know, is enough of a reason to take heed and listen to some of these points.
Ben Underwood of the NFU. It's fair to say it's been another mixed bag when it comes to the weather this week, something that hasn't gone unnoticed by our agronomist, Sean Sparling.
Yes, morning, Sean. They don't call it March many weathers for nothing, do they? This time last week, I was sitting on Lincoln Heath on the same farm I'm on now, and it was 16 degrees. It was beautiful and sunny. There was a lovely wind blowing. Everything was drying out. The land was getting ready for work. We were drilling. We were pre-emergence herbicides. Awesome. And then a week later, it's now 10 degrees. It's blowing a hooly and it's raining again. And it's just typical of most Marches that you tend to get the weather drying us up just enough ready for that next drop of rain. It's always at its driest just before it comes wet, is what they always used to say, and they're not far wrong. So what's that done? What it's going to do is make the season concertina up. We're already seeing a delay. We're way behind in spring barley, spring wheat, vining peas, combining peas, spring beans, and indeed sugar beet drilling. So all that has yet to happen. Anything that went in the ground last week, because the wind suddenly picked up on Thursday, Friday, which meant people had drilled spring wheat, spring barley, peas, beans, but they hadn't got the pre-emergent herbicide on. That now needs to be your priority. If there's an opportunity to go and spray, you need to go and do that, because not just in peas and beans, which obviously the pre-emergent herbicides, the likes of Clomazone and Linuron and Nirvana, all of these materials require to be on pre-emergence. There's no clearance for them post them, and they're actually quite dangerous to put on once the crop is emerging. So if that means you have to go and make a few ruts in the field, go and make a few ruts in the field, because your options are so limited once they're through the ground. Now, obviously, you have to go and make sure the crop is still within the scope of being safe to apply these herbicides. If you look on the label, they need 30 mil of settled soil above the seed. If the shoot of the germinating plant is within 12 millimetres of the surface, you should still be okay to get that on in the next day or two. But if you've gone 7, 8, 9 days since you drilled and they're starting to prick through the ground, you need to have a long conversation with your agronomist and make sure they're happy to put their name to you going, because you are starting to push the boundaries once you get to that point. So prioritise the ones that were drilled and the ones that weren't sprayed. Similarly with spring wheat and spring barley, if they went in the ground, if you've got flufenacet, diflufenican, if you've got prosulfocarb, pendimethalin, any of these things really need to be on pre-emergence. That's what the EMU and that's what the legislation and the label says you have to do. So that's what you have to do. If in doubt and it's pricking through the ground, you're probably too late. Now, your options are still limited in cereals, but at least you can do far more for broadleaf weeds. It's the grass weeds which are going to cause you problems. So again, have that conversation with your agronomist. And as I'm looking at my fields today, I can find an awful lot of fields at grow stage 30. I've even found one this morning at grow stage 32 on the lead tiller. So they are moving. It's a bit like looking in a mirror. Things will always look further away than they actually are, and do not judge it by calendar date. Get your little knife out, go into the field and have a look, because drive-by agronomy is not the way to do it. And growth stage 30 triggers your T0 fungicide. Now I would argue that you are far better to be 5 days early with that T0 fungicide than you are to be 5 days late. Septoria is widespread. So as long as you're basing your T0 around chlorthalonil, you're going to protect the rest of the canopy, give yourself 3 weeks protection, and then you may have to pull your T1 slightly forward by 3 or 4 days. But again, it's always going to be better to be 3 or 4 days early than 3 or 4 days late. So for me, I'm already starting T0s. There is yellow rust out there, as we said last week, in some of the susceptible varieties, more so in Reflection than any other, but you can find it in the Sky Falls and several others, Cordial, to name just a couple, Diego even, we found it in this morning. So be on top of it, don't let it be on top of you. Oilseed rape, as I said last week, if you've still got picloram and clopyrrolid, those sorts of materials to apply, I think you're probably way too late now. Once you get to green bud, you're too late, and yellow bud is widely upon us. Pollen beetle, I haven't seen anything even remotely resembling threshold. This wind will keep them out of the crops. And nothing out there is leading me to want to go and spray for pollen beetle. Remember, once they start to flower, they're your friend, they're doing pollinating. So if your agronomist is saying to you, we're full of pollen beetle, we need to spray, get him to show you. Because for me, I haven't seen anything like that even remotely resembling it. Light leaf spot levels remain relatively low, but they are most certainly increasing. You will only ever get 3 weeks from any fungicide as protection, so monitor the job very, very closely. And second dose of nitrogen is actually going on quite a few of these oilseed rape crops because they're absolutely running like billy-o now. Sugar beet, if it was me and it was spring drilling, I'm telling people to prioritise your spring wheat, your spring barley, your peas, your beans, and then do your sugar beet at the end of that. Sugar beet will have a happy season if it goes in May. You can't grow cuckoo barley or cuckoo wheat. So middle of April is about as late as you want to be with those. Peas and beans, pick them when you can. Remember, they don't like wet feet. But for goodness sake, if you've got blackgrass in these fields, make sure you get those pre-em herbicides on as soon as you possibly can. Speak to your agronomist and hopefully you can work together and get the job rounded up and sorted. To me, if you can drill a field, you should be spraying a field. So hopefully this time next week, things will be all warm again and we'll all be out there stripped to the waist, getting our legs nice and brown.
Speak for yourself. I'm not sure about that. Thank you, Sean. He's just refreshed his website, actually, sasagronomy.co.uk, which includes plenty more of his thoughts, particularly on glyphosate and that petition that you might have been reading about in the national press of late. It's also been confirmed, by the way, that Sean will be on a panel with NFU Vice President Guy Smith at Cereals this year, debating that very issue. More on the weather with our forecast for the week ahead in a moment. First, we need the latest from Open Field. It's Henry Young this week.
Good morning, how are you?
I'm good. What's happening in your world?
Well, it's been and it's certainly an interesting week, I think, with the amount of rain that we've seen. But actually, it's quite nice to see quite a few people out with their drills again. So hopefully the weather will continue good and people will be able to crack on with spring drilling.
Hopefully.
So first of all, having a bit of a look at the wheat markets. At the moment, they're being underpinned by the tight old crop balance sheets. A lot of people seeing a lot of empty sheds at the moment. Obviously not the same as kind of previous years, but it is impacting the market. It's also offering a bit of support to the new crop, with values certainly better than they have been, say, this time last year. We are seeing a bit of demand for the ethanol, but I will talk about that later on as well. At the moment, it's whether or not exports and imports are going to be how quite they're going to trade. So just having a quick look at the kind of global international market, we're seeing some flow of import tenders recently, with Egypt, Saudi Arabia, amongst other buyers. Also, they're seeing some stocks. There is some issues, though, at the moment coming forward, with Argentina, Russia and France all having problems at the top end of their quality spectrum. This was always going to be something to think about and to look at. There has been some seven loads actually rejected by Egypt this week, but they have been sent away for fumigation and cleaning, again, trying to knock that bit off the price. So during the recent weeks, we've actually seen Egypt come in with four very big tenders, taking their annual season buying well above what it was last year. I know we're seeing a lot talked about the bread riots, the weak Egyptian pound, also concerns about the authorities managing the new crop harvest. It's still going to be a country that's going to need to buy. They're still going to need to feed their people. They need to keep them happy at the end of the day. It has been very hard work for the private wheat trade within the country, so that will be an interesting one going forward. The latest US usage data has shown little kind of effect to the balance sheet. The thing going forward is going to be the demand from the likes of Vivergo, who are back open, but again, they were in the news again this week. So we'll see what happens there going forward. The animal feed demand remains firm. This is mainly due to concerns, obviously, with poultry, which we've spoken about for many weeks now, and also with other sectors pushing up. The increased price of milk is also helping the dairy industry. With spring around the corner, it's likely to see when this grass is growing and all the cows back out again. That'll be an impact. That'll have an impact as well. The UK prices are currently benefiting from the sterling, and also with post Brexit, with EU elections, it's having some mixed opinions. Quite what impact it's going to have? We've obviously already seen the Netherlands. We've also got France, Italy, and Germany well on its way. So whether or not it's going to be interesting to see what impact this has on the markets, on the currency as well. Having a look at those prices though, April at the moment trading at 145 to 148, June 147 to 150, harvest 130 to 133, November 17 132 to 135. Those prices are a lot better than probably this time last year. So having a look at the feed barley market, the USDA has finally released the Aussie barley numbers up. I think we all expected that with what was being talked about, but they've actually now done it. It is going to see, we're going to have to see a lot of exports coming out of Australia with the feed barley. Up to 1.8 million tonnes going to be shipped. Ironically, this is the highest number they've ever shipped, but that was on three commodities. So the gloves are going to be off quite where it's going to go. We'll wait and see. I think also the interesting bit will be is when you get the boats in there, what are they going to be loading out? Is it going to be canola? Is it going to be wheat? Or is it going to be barley? The competition is going to be there. Having a bit of a look at the new crop barley within Europe, it's anticipated to show increased area of drilling, obviously with what we've spoken about earlier. Demand for the feed grains, it's going to be an interesting one, but also we'll hopefully see the malting barley sector come back in as well. All eyes are going to remain on Spain to see if they can pull off this bumper harvest that they've been speaking about, with yields up as well. The EU is expecting France to produce a better yield compared to last year, obviously with the weather and the impacts they've had. So having a look at those prices, April 120 to 124, June 17, 123 to 126, harvest 109, November 17, 114 to 115. The oilseed market, well, the soy harvest is well on its way. Harvest, seeing Brazil is seeing some very big numbers. Also, we're seeing some dry conditions in the US, so that may impact the planting over there. They are talking the soybean numbers up over there, but remember, quite a lot of it's still in the bag. So it's going to be whether or not it's going to be planted or not. Soy can be a very fickle commodity and weather dependent, so again, watch this space. The UK crop size of 17-18 remains under scrutiny, with more of the area that is being planted than originally anticipated. I don't know quite how this is going to play out in the market. Obviously, we've seen some problems in Essex with flea beetle and whether or not there's been any damage. So I think it's a wait and see on this one. Those prices, April 342, June 344, harvest 303, November 311. Just a quick update on the bean market. After drifting to the highs of the of feed beans, it's found a level now. There's still no human consumption demand. We don't expect the Egyptians to come back in to the UK for supply for the rest of the season. This is because of quite how they've been stored and what impact it's going to have. The new crop, there's little talk about first-hand consumers coming forward. So wait and see what the order books bring. Feed beans at the moment for April, 158 to 160. And November, 152 to 155.
Brilliant. Thank you, Henry.
Thank you very much.
More from Open Field on next Sunday's programme.
The Farming Programme. 5-day forecast.
Yes, let's turn to the week ahead then, shall we? And patchy cloud today. Highs of 12 Celsius, that wind from the east, 12 to 15 miles an hour. Overnight tonight, staying cloudy. Possibility of some showers in the early hours of tomorrow morning. Lows of 5 Celsius, the wind continuing from the east-northeast. Again, about 10, maybe gusting at 20 miles an hour. Possibility of a few showers through the morning tomorrow, staying overcast. Highs cooler 9 Celsius. That wind still from the east, 10 to 15 miles an hour. Monday into Tuesday. Starts cloudy, but that cloud should clear after midnight. A cooler night, 5 Celsius the low with clear skies. The wind dropping down a little from the east, about 5 to 10 miles an hour. And then Tuesday itself, bit of early sunshine, but again the possibility of a few showers on and off through the day. Highs of 13 Celsius and the wind more from the south-southwest, 15 to 20 miles an hour. As we head towards the middle of the week, it looks like, again, possibility of a few showers. Could be heavy in isolated spots. Got lows for first thing Wednesday morning of 8 Celsius, that wind getting up from the south-southwest at 10, gusting at 30 miles an hour, though. And then through Wednesday itself, as I say, possibility of a sharp shower. Highs of 13 Celsius, that wind continuing from the south-southwest at about 15, gusting at 30, maybe even 35 miles an hour. And it looks like that gusty wind will continue through the latter end of the week with some heavy rain also on the cards. As I always say, that could change as we get later into the week, and our hourly forecasts will, of course, keep you updated on all of that. That is the forecast, though, and indeed another week in the world of agriculture. We'll do it all again, as expected, next Sunday at the same time. Until then, have a good week's lambing, if you're lambing at the moment. Chat next week.